This week in the Bible study hour, I will be speaking on the general theme, the Christian and secular humanism. I will be using a number of overhead transparencies and some mimeograph handouts during the 5 periods that we have together. There should be enough handouts for everyone, I'm quite certain of that. But let me make a suggestion about taking notes. All right, here are the first 3 topics. What is secular humanism? What are its goals? What does the Bible teach concerning the basic attitudes of secular humanism? Does the Christian have a responsibility to try to change the character and conduct of non-Christian members of his or her society? Does the Christian have a responsibility to try to stop or slow down the secularization of his or her culture and society? And then, what is the place of Christian moral values and standards in a pluralistic and largely secular society? Those are the 5 topics that we hope to cover this week. Now, the first topic, today's topic, what is secular humanism and what are its goals, is mostly background material. Of course, tomorrow we'll be covering biblical background, and the rest of the week we'll be looking at biblical background in terms of principles, biblical concepts and principles that underlie what should be our responsibility in regard to the development of this particular worldview. Before we begin defining the basic concepts and goals of the view, we should ask the question, why should we be concerned about secular humanism? Why should we be concerned about this particular view, other than that it is the topic for the week? I suggest 3 reasons as to why we should be concerned. The first of these is because secular humanism has permeated almost every educational institution and discipline of knowledge in our society and culture. Just a simple breakdown there of disciplines of knowledge. Natural and social sciences, the humanities and the arts, those could each be broken down further and some additions could be made, but it's only a representative selection. That's the first reason why we should be concerned. Here are the 2nd and 3rd reasons. Because secular humanism wishes to eliminate all absolute concepts and standards in our society and culture, particularly in the realms of reality, knowledge, and values, thereby opening the door for the acceptance of a materialistic, agnostic, and hedonistic worldview with all of its implications. Now, we'll explain those terms as we go along, and I would suggest that if you have questions to raise, that you jot them down and save them for the end. And we'll try to leave time for questions each day at the end of our period. And thirdly, because secular humanism is diametrically opposed to all types of formal religion in general and to Christianity in particular, secular humanism has grown up against the background of Christianity, and it has its guns pointed directly at Christianity, although it's also concerned with other religions. These then are the 3 basic reasons I would like to stress as to why we should be concerned about secular humanism. But now we must define what secular humanism is. What is it? What is it we're talking about? That's a good question. What is it? What is humanism? Well, first, what is humanism in general? Now, here the print may get a little smaller. Can you read that, brother? Okay, great. Notice humaneness is not humanism. The quality of compassion, sympathy, consideration for other human beings or animals. We don't mean humaneness by humanism. Humanitarianism is not humanism. Humanitarianism, a point of view which attempts to promote human welfare and social reform. And the humanities, those disciplines of study which we call the humanities, are not humanism. Those branches of learning which have primarily a cultural character, such as language, literature, the fine arts, philosophy. Sometimes the term cultural humanism is used. Sometimes it means a program of study of the classic Latin and Greek writers, stressing interpretation and literary composition. Sometimes cultural humanism means that. And sometimes cultural humanism means an attitude, not an area of study or certain areas of study, but an attitude stressing the dignity of man with his potential and actions, and expressed through poetry, drama, music, painting, sculpture, and philosophy, especially as we saw the flowering of the Renaissance, cultural humanism there. What is humanism specifically as a view? I'm going to use a quotation here of four points, four ideas, four concepts which Paul Kurtz, K-U-R-T-Z, gives in The Humanist magazine. The American Humanist Association, of which Paul Kurtz has been president for a number of years, publishes a magazine called The Humanist. They now have two magazines, but The Humanist has an article by Paul Kurtz in which he says there are four basic principles of humanism. Contemporary humanism is, first of all, anti-supernaturalistic. God does not exist, according to this view. There's no soul or mind separate from the brain. Man has no immortal destiny beyond the grave. Secondly, human values are relative. That is, they have their source in man alone and cannot be grounded in an outside absolute source such as God. Thirdly, human reason is the sole source and guide of human action. Thus, divine revelation is as an informational source for human conduct is rejected. Fourthly, the humanist is committed to seek the greatest happiness for the greatest number and to further the welfare of mankind, particularly by working towards solutions to the problems of social injustice, poverty, war, overpopulation, and ecology. As expressed by Paul Kurtz, who's certainly an expert spokesman for secular humanism, these are the four basic principles of humanism. Anti-God, human values relative, man must make them up. As Jean-Paul Sartre says, if God does not exist, man must not only make up all his values, but he must make up man himself as to what man is. Human reason, that's the final source of all knowledge. And this social concern, the social concept, the here and now solutions to the problems of the world. Now, what is secular humanism? Here is an attempt at some formal definition. Secular humanism is not a formal philosophy or philosophical worldview. If you look it up in the Encyclopedia of Philosophy, you won't find secular humanism. It's not a formal philosophy. It is rather an informal, generalized outlook on an attitude toward the most basic issues of existence. Now here, taking apart the name, secular humanism. It's secular in that it rejects any claim of divinely revealed authoritative answers to the basic issues and questions of life. It's secular. Rejecting God and revelation and any answers that God and revelation may give us. And it's humanistic in that it asserts that man and man alone can and must. See, if God doesn't exist, then man must provide his own answers. There's nobody then to provide the answers to the most basic issues and questions of life except man. Man must make up the answers. Without God, man is cursed. He's doomed to make up his own answers. Whatever they're worth, whatever people may say about the answers, they're the only answers man has under this particular view. What are these basic issues and questions of life that we mentioned? The basic issues and questions of life. Man must provide his own answers to the basic issues and questions of life. May I suggest these? The issue of ultimate origins. The issue of ultimate meaning. The issue of ultimate destiny. Now, a lot of people are familiar with those ideas. Sometimes they're expressed in these terms. Where did we come from? What are we doing here? Where are we going? The questions, the most basic questions of existence, the nature of ultimate reality. What's ultimately real? The question of the attainability of absolute truth. I'm going to break these down in a moment. They're technical terms. And the question of the existence of absolute values. Reality, truth, values. The most basic questions we can ask about those issues, those areas. Now to unpack those, the meaning of the basic issues of life. What are we talking about? Ultimate origins. Where did everything come from? Where did matter energy come from? Where did the physical universe, the structured universe, come from? How did it all come about? Where did life come from? And how did man arise? See, those are very basic issues. The issue of ultimate meaning. What does it all mean? Is it all meaningless? Does the universe have a purpose? Does life have any meaning? If so, what is it? Very basic questions, very basic issues. The issue of ultimate destiny. Where is it all heading? Is there a future? Is there a final end to everything? Some people hope so. Some people hope that when they die, that's the end. That's the end of it. Nothing more. Finish. Do human beings continue to exist following their physical death? If so, what is it like, this continued existence? Survival of physical death. What is it like? Lots of people have a fear that there may indeed be something following physical death. And they're not sure what it's going to be like. As the Bible says, they're all their lifetime subject to bondage through fear of death. Well, these are, as you see, are basic issues. What are the basic questions of life? When we talk about ultimate reality, what are we speaking of? What is the basic stuff of the universe? Is it matter? Is it an idea? Is it something mental? Is everything material? See, a great many people in the natural sciences tell us, yes, everything essentially is matter. It's material. It's physical stuff. And there's nothing else but physical stuff. Did it always exist? Does God exist? Is man made entirely of matter, or is he non-material as well? And does evil exist? You would think that question would hardly be raised in our day. What about absolute truth? Is truth relative or absolute? Can truth be known? If so, how? Or is all belief merely opinion? You have your opinion, I have mine. Mine's just as good as yours, yours is just as good as mine. Is that the way it is? Absolute values. Are all values relative, time-bound, mere consensus expressions? What's the consensus of the community? If everybody believes that homosexuality is okay, is that what forms our values? Merely a consensus expression of the community, of the society? Are some values absolute, timeless expressions of God's nature and will? Makes a big difference how you come down on those two questions. And what is man's highest good? What is his highest good? Is it survival? See, that's the highest good for secular humanism, survival of the human race. Anything is worth sacrificing so that the human race can survive. Now you can see how that can play right into the hands of those who would say, is it better to be dead than red, or is it better to be red than dead? If the survival of the human race is the highest value, then everything else must go before it. I would like to propose a working definition of secular humanism to use during this week. Secular humanism is that philosophy of life. It's not a formal philosophy, but it is a philosophy of life. It's a collection of basic beliefs about life that rejects any conception of God or revealed truth. That's the secular side of it. And asserts that man and man alone can and must provide his own final answers to the most basic issues and questions of life. That's the humanist side of it. I'd like to stress this as a working definition that we're going to employ through the week. Secular humanism. Now, other speakers this week may suggest variations on this, may suggest other ways of looking at secular humanism, and that's all right. That's no problem. I don't offer this as an exclusive definition of secular humanism, what it is, but merely as something which I think is helpful as an insight into what the worldview is all about. Now, the burden of this morning is not simply to know what secular humanism is, or at least to get a basic grasp of the concept, but to look at the goals of secular humanism, the basic beliefs of this view, the basic goals that it envisions for Western society. And I think for most humanists, eventually the world. They have a global view. A very ambitious conception. A global view. But first, for Western culture and society. And to get the answers to this question, what are secular humanism's beliefs and goals, we're going to go to the basic documents of secular humanism, namely Humanist Manifesto 1 and Humanist Manifesto 2. Humanist Manifesto 1 was published in 1933, but Humanist Manifesto 2 was published in 1973. It's greatly updated. It's not as rosy and optimistic as Manifesto 1 was. Manifesto 1 was very optimistic about the future of the human race and what could be done through social engineering. Manifesto 2 is not quite so optimistic. It does not sit well with many people to have this optimism of 1933 in 1973, especially following World War II and the Holocaust and the various things that have come since that time. I'm going to ask our two splendid ushers here to distribute Humanist Manifesto 1. We have enough so that you will all have a copy of this basic document. I hope you won't file it in the wastebasket. I hope that from time to time you'll have opportunity to look at it and stare it in the face, because as far as secular humanists are concerned, this is the shape of the future. All right, let's look at this together, please. And I would like to suggest something. I would like to suggest that we go through this together. That you will have a temptation to just read ahead and run ahead. Many of my students have that temptation. But if we could stay together, then perhaps I can make some relevant comments. I won't read the whole thing, but I'll point up certain highlights. The time has come for widespread recognition of the radical changes in religious beliefs throughout the modern world. This was written in 1933. The time has passed for mere revision of traditional attitudes. Science and economic change have disrupted the old beliefs. By the way, I know you don't have a desk. I'm fortunate. I had a desk, and I have a desk, but you don't have one. If you want to underline and star, this is your copy. It will make it much more useful if you highlight this. All right, so make it work for you. Star things, underline things, so that it's not just a block of material staring at you the next time you, Lord willing, look at it. And then skip down two lines at the end of the line. In every field of human activity, the vital movement is now in the direction of a candid and explicit humanism. Notice the next line, in order that religious humanism may be better understood. Now, they use that expression all through this, religious humanism. They're trying to get an acceptance at this particular point, 1933. And they have some liberal religionists on their side, so it's strategic to use religious humanism. Next paragraph. There is great danger of a final and, we believe, fatal identification of the word religion with doctrines and methods which have lost their significance and which are powerless to solve the problem of human living in the 20th century. Now drop down 2, 4, 6 lines. They mention the changefulness of religions throughout the centuries. But through all changes, religion itself remains constant in its quest for abiding values, an inseparable feature of human life. Notice the distinction between religions and religion. Today, man's larger understanding of the universe, his scientific achievements, his deeper appreciation of brotherhood, have created a situation which requires a new statement of the means and purposes of religion. Such a vital, fearless, and frank religion, capable of furnishing adequate social goals and personal satisfaction, may appear to many people as a complete break with the past. While this age does owe a vast debt to traditional religions, it is nonetheless obvious that any religion that can hope to be a synthesizing and dynamic force for today must be shaped for the needs of this age. To establish such a religion is a major necessity of the present. It is a responsibility which rests upon this generation. We, therefore, see, it's a necessity which falls upon this generation to establish a new fearless religion. We therefore affirm the following. Humanism is here represented and offered as the new religion. First, religious humanists regard the universe as self-existing and not created. Second, humanism believes that man is a part of nature and that he's emerged as a result of continuous process, that is, he has evolved from non-human animals. Third, holding an organic view of life, humanists find that the traditional dualism of mind and body must be rejected. In this view, mind, or soul, is simply the brain thinking, the physical organism. Fourth, humanism recognizes that man's religious culture and civilization, as clearly depicted by anthropology and history, are the product of a gradual development. Here you have it. Religions are the product of a development similar to the development of living things. So religion itself is a product of evolution. Fifth, humanism asserts that the nature of the universe depicted by modern science makes unacceptable any supernatural or cosmic guarantees of human value. Drop down the last line. Religion must formulate its hopes and plans in the light of the scientific spirit and method. Sixth, we're convinced that the time has passed for theism, deism, modernism, and the several varieties of new thought. And we agree that the time has passed for all of these except for theism, specifically Christian theism, which is the view of the Bible. Seventh, religion consists of those actions, purposes, and experiences which are humanly significant. Nothing human is alien to the religious. Now, this is a very strange view of religion. Whatever makes life satisfying, whatever contributes to the good life, is itself religious. That's a total redefinition of the word religion. Eight, religious humanism considers the complete realization of human personality to the end of man's life and seeks its fulfillment and its development and fulfillment in the here and now. This is the explanation of the humanist social passion. Notice the chief goal of man is to realize his own potential, not to bring glory to God. The chief end of man is not the glory of God. But without seeking God's glory, man can never achieve his highest potential. Ninth, in place of the old attitudes involved in worship and prayer, the humanist finds his religious emotions expressed in a heightened sense of personal life and in a cooperative effort to promote social well-being. Instead of love to God and to his neighbor, the humanist emphasizes personal self-satisfaction and enlightened self-interest. Hence, it follows that there will be no uniquely religious emotions and attitudes of the kind hitherto associated with belief in the supernatural. No distinction between natural and supernatural love, joy, peace, long-suffering, goodness, faith, meekness, and self-control exist. No distinction between the natural and the supernatural expressions of those ideas. 11. Man will learn to face the crises of life in terms of his knowledge of their naturalness and probability. Crises of life, what are those? Well, death, or severe trauma, physical distress, debilitating or diseases which are mortal. We assume that humanism will take the path of social and mental hygiene and discourage sentimental and unreal hopes and wishful thinking. Well, hope beyond the grave. Pastor Muirin mentioned hope last night. Hope for the future, hope beyond the grave, is to be discouraged. These are merely unrealistic and sentimental ideas. 12. Believing that religion must work increasingly for joy in living, religious humanists aim to foster the creative in man and to encourage achievements that add to the satisfactions of life. 13. Religious humanism maintains that all associations and institutions exist for the fulfillment of human life. And then drop down three lines. Religious institutions, their ritualistic forms, ecclesiastical methods, and communal activities must be reconstituted as rapidly as experience allows in order to function effectively in the modern world. All religions, plural, must be changed so that they will exist for the fulfillment of man. Why? Because man is the chief end of man. 14. The humanists are firmly convinced that existing acquisitive and profit-motivated society has shown itself to be inadequate and that a radical change in method, controls, and motives must be instituted. A socialized and cooperative economic order must be established to the end that the equitable distribution of the means of life be possible. By the way, there are some contradictions here because they go on to say the goal of humanism is a free and universal society in which people voluntarily and intelligently cooperate for the common good. Then they say humanists demand. Well, radical changes, you see, must be made according to their view. Socialism must be established and wealth must be redistributed, but all voluntarily and freely. There are some contradictions here. 15th and last, we assert that humanism will A, affirm life rather than deny it, They seek to elicit the possibilities of life, not flee from it, and C, endeavor to establish the conditions of a satisfactory life for all, not merely for the few. What does it mean to affirm life? Does it mean live it to the full with no moral or religious restraints? It seems that that's what turns up later. So stand the theses of religious humanism. Though we consider the religious forms and ideas of our fathers no longer adequate, the quest for the good life is still the central task for mankind. Man is at last becoming aware that he alone is responsible for the realization of the world of his dreams, that he has within himself the power for its achievement. He must set intelligence and will to the task. Since for the humanist, God does not exist, man must provide his own answers to the most basic issues and questions of life. Man must create his own world. Now, I'm going to ask the ushers to hand out Humanist Manifesto 2. And again, we're going to note certain highlights and make some comments. Now, this is a longer document. Once again, I'd appreciate your holding this so that we can at least begin to look at it together. I don't expect you, by the way, to absorb all of this in the few minutes at which we've been looking at it. I don't expect that. You understand? I don't expect that. I hope that you will become both interested and sufficiently concerned, however, to look at these sometime today or sometime during this week so that you will grasp the full impact of what secular humanists are proposing for this nation, this society, for Western culture. Anybody over here still need a copy? Okay, one, two, a couple up here in the front. Would you raise your hand so the usher can see who you are? Thank you. Over here, anybody who doesn't have a copy? Okay, there are a few extra copies. Right here. Great. Again, very efficient. By the way, a suggestion for free, I asked the ushers to stagger these in piles of eight so that all they have to do is hand out a pile of eight to down the rows quickly. You might do that if you're handing out materials to your Sunday school class or to your church so that you can quickly distribute material. Now let us look at Humanist Manifesto 2. 113 signed this one, 148 later signed it. On the last page, I have listed some of the signatories of Humanist Manifesto 2. Very interesting names there. Some of them, perhaps you know, others perhaps you're not familiar with. A couple of very interesting names there. Isaac Asimov, of course, is a famous writer. He's gone over the 200 mark now, Opus 200. Lester Mundell is Walter Mundell's brother. His father was a past president of the American Humanist Association. Andrei Sakharov, who has been much in the news recently. B.F. Skinner, perhaps the best-known psychologist today. Betty Friedan. A number of interesting names. If you're interested at all, I have a copy here of publication of Humanist Manifestos 1 and 2 with all the signatories. If you're interested in looking through the names, a lot of names, but some of them you may find rather interesting. All right, let's look at this together. The next century can be and should be the humanistic century. Next paragraph. The future is, however, filled with dangers. Next paragraph. You say, boy, we'll get through this quickly. Traditional moral codes and newer irrational cults both fail to meet the pressing needs of today and tomorrow. Two lines down. They separate rather than unite people. Why this concern about uniting people? Well, although for humanism, values are relative, theoretically at least, they're relative. Nevertheless, the value of the survival of the human race seems to be almost absolute for secular humanists. Thus, the stress on uniting rather than separating people. Uniting peoples is a step toward survival. Two paragraphs down. Many kinds of humanism exist in the contemporary world. The varieties and emphases of naturalistic humanism include scientific, ethical, democratic, religious, and Marxist humanism. Drop down 2, 4, 6 lines. Many within religious groups believing in the future of humanism now claim humanist credentials. A great many of the liberal theologians, a great many liberal churchmen have hooked their star onto the tail of humanism. Humanism is an ethical process through which we all can move above and beyond the divisive particulars, heroic personalities, dogmatic creeds, and ritual customs of past religions or their mere negation. We affirm a set of common principles that can serve as a basis for united action. They are designed for a secular society on a planetary scale. There's the global interest. Here it is. Here's the blueprint. For these reasons, we submit this new humanist manifesto for the future of humankind. For us, it is a vision of hope, a direction for satisfying survival. Now, there it is again. There's the basic value. Religion. Second paragraph. We believe that traditional, dogmatic, or authoritarian religions that place revelation, God, ritual, or creed above human needs and experience do a disservice to the human species. That's an important statement. Any account of nature should pass the test of scientific evidence. In our judgment, the dogmas and myths of traditional religions do not do so. Skip down 2 lines. We find insufficient evidence for belief in the existence of a supernatural. It is either meaningless or irrelevant to the question of the survival and fulfillment of the human race. Now, there it states it baldly. There is the central value of secular humanism. As non-theists, we begin with humans, not God, nature, not deity. Of course, it should be said they begin with humans and they begin with nature, but they never do come to God or deity. That should also be said. Now, skip down 2 paragraphs. In the middle of that paragraph, we appreciate. We reject those features of traditional religious morality that deny humans a full appreciation of their own potentialities and responsibilities. Then down the last 3 lines of that paragraph. We can discover no divine purposes or providence for the human species. While there is much that we do not know, humans are responsible for what we are or will become. No deity will save us. We must save ourselves. Now, they're not talking about eternal salvation. They don't believe in that. They're talking about the salvation of the human race. They're talking about survival. Second, promises of immortal salvation or fear of eternal damnation are both illusory. They're an illusion or harmful. Drop down a line. Modern science discredits such historic concepts as the ghost in the machine and the separable soul. The soul is separated from the body or distinct from the body. Rather, science affirms that the human species is an emergence from natural evolutionary forces. As far as we know, the total personality is a function of the biological organism. There is no credible evidence that life survives the death of the body. We continue to exist in our progeny, our children, and in the way that our lives have influenced others in our culture. That's what they mean by immortality. Drop down to the bottom, ethics. Third, we affirm that moral values derive their source from human experience. Ethics is autonomous and situational, needing no theological or ideological sanction. Top of the next page. Human life has meaning because we create and develop our future. Drop down two lines. We strive for the good life here and now. Fourth, reason and intelligence are the most effective instruments that humankind possesses. There is no substitute, neither faith nor passion suffices in itself. Now there we must stop. We must look tomorrow at the rest of this because I'd like to make a few other comments. Not a great deal more, but we'll begin tomorrow, Lord willing, finishing up this, and that will form a good introduction or a good background, at least, to our second major concern. What does the Bible teach concerning the basic attitude of secular humanism? These, then, are the basic beliefs, and so far as we've gone through them, the basic goals of secular humanism. Question: should this concern us as believers? Question: do we have a responsibility to try to do something about it? Question: is there anything that we can do about it? Well, some of the seminars this week are going to be dealing with that very issue. And later, as we proceed, I'm going to address that issue myself. What can we do about it? I know everybody's interested and concerned about that question. And Lord willing, we're going to look at that together. And I pray that God will use this week through all the speakers, through all of the presentations, through all of the seminars, to not only enlighten us and concern us, but to give us some insights as to what we as believers can do. As Brother Hartman said yesterday morning, we are in a fight. We are in a struggle. The forces of Satan have ranged themselves through people who don't even believe in Satan. The forces of Satan have ranged themselves against Christianity. They would like to wipe Christianity off the face of the earth. Well, if you and I, as believers, are not going to try to stop them by whatever means God gives us, whatever means are at our disposal, whatever means are righteous and proper and appropriate, then who is going to stop it? Who is going to stop it? May God help us to be concerned. May God help us to get a concern and a burden. Not be overly concerned, so to be so anxious that we get wrapped up in our anxiety and thus wind up doing nothing. But be concerned enough to look at the answers God has provided us with, so that we may step out and do what it is in each of our power to do. Let us pray. O gracious Father, how we thank you for the resources that are available to us by your Spirit and by your Word. Oh, greater is he that is in us than he that is in the world. We thank you for this assurance and confidence. Help us as we further study, not only to understand, but to seek ways and means of combating this philosophy of life. Wherever it crops up in our own lives, help us to combat it. Wherever we have been influenced or are being influenced by this worldview, help us to pinpoint it. And then cast it out, turn aside from it, and combat it for Jesus' sake. And we'll give you all the praise because we ask it in his wonderful name. Amen.